You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, rolling on here, Michael Bumpus with me as well. So, philosophy versus practicality. How do you have a favorite philosopher, Bump?
Do I? No, I don't.
All right.
I'd say like Tupac or somebody.
That's a good philosopher. I think he's certainly in the running. All right. The reason this came up is, I don't know if you saw last night, Jesse Winker comes up. It's late in the game. They're down a couple of runs. They've really struggled to score. I think they were down 3-0 at the time. It's maybe the sixth inning. He comes up to lead off the inning, and they employ some sort of a super shift against Jesse Winker, where they had 4 outfielders and then 3 infielders all on the right side of second base. Okay? So that was the defensive alignment that the Blue Jays employed for Jesse Winker. And I understand, in theory, the philosophy that says don't bunt, that a getting on base, just getting a single, is not worth nearly as much as the potential power that you could have by actually swinging away. So don't bunt. There's not enough upside there. And I understand that. Ted Williams said it. It makes some sense to me. I get the value of the modern power game and how it's worth more and that guys don't bunt as much as they used to. I kind of understand all that. And I'm not one of these crazy, like, you know, the game should be like it was in the 70s and they should bunt guys over from first base all the time and manufacture runs. I'm not that guy either.
Yeah.
But when you're trailing by 3, you're getting dominated and your team's not hitting at all, and they're literally giving you the entire side with 4 outfielders and 3 infielders on the first base side of second base, why wouldn't you at least attempt one bunt down the third baseline and try to at least start some kind of a rally?
I understand you right now, right? Get a guy on base and things could happen. But Winger's been hitting the ball. He's been squaring that thing up.
I know.
And because he's been squaring it up, I'm like, take your chances, man. Let's go. You might send one oppo. You know what I'm saying? You might manufacture a run yourself. So, yeah, I get your logic. I get your way of thinking. If he were struggling, then I'd be okay with it. But because he hasn't been struggling, I'm like, man, swing the bat.
Yeah, and in general, like, hey, if it's a tie ball game, I'm with you, right? I want to see the damage that he can do even down 1. You're down 3-0. You got 1 hit in the game. You say Kikuchi is dominating you, which is embarrassing enough. And I think that's the time to break from philosophy, because I think you're right in the philosophy. It says Jesse Winker, if given the opportunity to hit away, will do more damage than by bunting. I agree. I totally agree. And in that one spot, I think I go against philosophy.
Yeah, and here's where I'm going to low-key talk myself out of what I just said.
That's okay.
Because Suarez has been playing well, too, right?
Right.
He's been – so you got Suarez backing you up. The way he's been swinging the bat the last, 3 or 4 games, it makes sense just getting a guy on base. So I don't think you're wrong in any situation. I think if you're bunting it, you're fine. I get what you're saying. Get a guy on base. See what Suarez does. But if I am running the show, I'm telling Winker, man, whatever the sign is, swing away. Let's go, baby.
Well, and by the way, Suarez hit a home run in the next bat, right? Like, so yep. The way it turned out, I'm sitting there looking at it going, man, I'm not usually a big advocate for this, but if they're going to give you that much space,
yeah,
hey, maybe just take first base in order to get something going. And as it turns out, right, he hits the ball on the ground to the second baseman. He's thrown out easily, and then Suarez hits a home run in the next bat. You're just like,
but you make it sound like it's a freebie here, which is where I'm confused.
Well, it's pretty close.
If you're close to a freebie. If you're a good bunter, it is. Otherwise, right, you're putting yourself deep into a strike count, and now you have Kikuchi who's throwing gas at you, or who has a good out pitch, and now you put yourself 2 strikes back.
Yeah, I don't know that it's not worth it, though. I mean, again, when you're being asked to bunt very finely, I totally get it. Not everybody's good at that. Not everybody practices
Shaq
it.
Free throws, right?
Et cetera. I'm not, this is not my philosophy. I am not of the belief that you should do this all the time. But there are rare situations, and I thought everything lined up perfectly last night for that to be one of them, where it's worth taking a shot. And Winker's only bunted, I think, 3 or 4 times in his career, hasn't done it in a couple of years. He's probably not asked to do that all that often. But you need a base runner, right? Like you're just in a you're in a position where you got to find your way on base, and to then see him roll over on a ground ball to second into the shift directly was just like,
which
gosh.
Won't be here next year, right?
Well, fine, but it's there in that game.
I get it. I'm just saying,
I mean, like, am I not going to do it because it's not going to be here next year?
No, I don't want to take the bat out of a good hitter's hands, and especially when he's actually being asked to do something that he's practiced to do, and that's what he's good at, and by making good contact.
You're not fully taking the bat out of his hands, though. This isn't a situation where there's a man on first or second, and I'm asking Jesse Winker to sacrifice him over. I grant that that's not something he does, nor do I want him to, right? The idea of losing Jesse Winker's bat in order to move a guy 90 feet is not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the best case scenario there? He hits a home run? Okay, now you're down 3-1, and you still need base runners, and it's probably one of those rally-killing home runs. Versus if you can get him on first base and push the guy into the stretch and start to build some sort of pressure against the pitcher who's been dominating you, as you just said, for most of the game. Again, all of these things line up for this to be one specific scenario where I would go against the norm and go against my own philosophy in order to try to put some pressure on the Blue Jays.
You like to zig when others zag. I get it.
No, I like that in this specific spot that I pay attention to the signs.
I get it.
Right? I mean, this is what the signs are telling me. This is what the game is calling for in that moment.
Mike, do you believe in momentum?
It depends. If I say yes, please don't sick Ray Roberts on me.
I won't.
Because I've had this fight with Ray before.
We've all had it.
I believe in it in basketball because I think basketball is an adrenaline sport more than any other, right? When all of a sudden everything gets going, it's why you call timeouts at the right time in basketball in order to break momentum and break. I think that is a huge part of basketball. In baseball, I don't know whether it's momentum in terms of a season because momentum is essentially the next night's starting pitcher. But I do believe in pressure, right? The same way I do in golf, that pressure creeps in. And when you can take a guy who's in a comfort zone in the windup and put him into the stretch and change things up and force him all of a sudden to think about what's going on around him, I think that you can change, I don't know if it's momentum, but the entire track that a game is taking.
Yeah, I can see that. And because you explained it that way, it makes me understand why you are for getting Winker on base. Because now there's more things to worry about, more things to consider. Not necessarily putting or changing momentum, but the situation
right.
changes.
Yes.
I get it.
Do you believe in momentum?
Definitely do. I can feel it. I can see it. I'm a full believer in momentum. I think that when you have a team down, you can keep them down. And if you give a team some hope, they can find that hope. Yeah, I'm definitely a believer.
Yeah, momentum. I think sometimes the alternate definition of momentum is confidence. That essentially it's something that allows you or your team to play with confidence.
Yeah, exactly. There's something that happens that reinforces that confidence, right? And then there's another event that happens that reinforces that confidence.
Yeah.
And it affects the mental of an athlete. And I think that's what momentum is. It's the mentality of a group of people, men or women, working towards a goal. When good things start to happen, then they start to believe more things are going to happen.
Well, Bump, it was a good thing that you happened on here over the course of the last 45 minutes. That's a terrible segue, but it is what it is. It's all I got right now. The momentum's not in my favor. Thank you, man. This is a lot of fun, and we'll talk later in the week.
All right, guys, take care.
All right, there you go. There's Michael Bumpus, and you can find him on Twitter. Of course, the Seahawks pre and post does a great job all throughout the day here on this station with us, with Jake and Stacy, with Wyman and Bob as well. So, all right, coming up next, we'll tell you everything you need to know, a little bit of Brock Heward, and a ranked that is already driving Mora crazy. That's right, it's only 9:10, and yet Mora is already mad about what's coming later in the hour.
Just one particular answer.
Don't go anywhere. It's Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, SeattleSports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, frustrating baseball game in a whole bunch of ways, and we just stumbled into another part of it. Justin and I just continued arguing about this for the last 5 minutes. Would you like to see Jesse Winker bunt in that situation in the sixth inning, leading off literally four outfielders and then three infielders all on the right side of second base? He ended up hitting a ball on the ground to the second baseman, who threw him out pretty easily. But in my view, yeah, I think you need a base runner, and I don't mind seeing a guy out of his comfort zone a little bit trying to lay down a bunt if that's what the defense is giving you. But I also understand Justin's argument, which is It's basically not what he does all the time, and you're kind of putting him behind the eight ball. So what do you guys think? You can always text it in, 206-421-3776. Regardless, a major frustration last night watching that game. And, look, I could deal with their offensive issues. I know that they're challenged a little bit right now. I know they got some injuries as well. But just maybe it was the ex-Mariner thing again, you know, having Yusei Kikuchi completely dominate them the way he did last night was incredibly frustrating.
Didn't get much going offensively. You know, Gino gets his 200th homer tonight. Good for him. He's been stuck on 199 for a little while. So hopefully that gets him going. And Frey's chipped in with a couple hits off the bench. But, you know, not our night, but no fault of Chris's. You know, the solo home runs don't usually beat him. Ultimately, it didn't beat us tonight. It was the other stuff after that.
Yeah, agreed. Flexen looked pretty good against a very good and deep lineup and a hitter's ballpark, and credit to him, he kept them in the game. But unfortunately, the bats, once again, completely cold. And as Scott mentioned, congratulations to Eugenio Suarez. Hits his 200th home run. Nice accomplishment. Obviously, he's been a good part of this team so far. But again, this is not the Mariner lineup that anyone really envisioned when this season began, right? Abraham Toro is not supposed to play every day. The loss of Mitch Haniger, the issues with Kelnick, they've put names like Ford and Souza into the lineup now on a daily basis, and now you're putting yourself in a spot where if Ty France just has an off night, well, the lineup just seems completely devoid of pop. By the way, as much as I love Ty France, and he is a hitting machine, remember when he had five home runs and we were saying, wow, he could hit 40? He hasn't hit a home run since. He hasn't hit a home run in like 2.5 weeks. Like, where's some of the pop, where's some of the power that this lineup really needs to generate, and they're just not seeing it? And guess what? Mitch Haniger is not coming back anytime soon. Kyle Lewis is not somebody, A, that I'd bank on and pray for, oh, he comes back and everything's going to be fine. But beyond that, he's not really playing the outfield, and he's not playing back-to-back days. So how close is he even from returning? They put themselves in a really tough spot right now, as, again, they have to finish off a tough road trip. They still have, what, 6 games left to play on this trip? And it's the road's not getting any easier for them. So these guys are going to have to dig deep, and they're going to have to just play a little bit better than they have so far.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, ESPN with their NFL power rankings out, and they got the Seahawks all the way down at number 27. Obviously not a familiar spot for this team. They've gone a decade with a legitimate franchise quarterback that has kept them always in the upper levels of these power rankings. Anyway, this is sort of their new situation. This is their new reality. And what's worse, that ranking actually fell after free agency from 25 to 27. So maybe not necessarily a great sign for their offseason additions. Now, does this mean they'll finish with the 6th worst record in football? No, of course not. Doesn't mean that. But having the number 6 pick, if they got there, wouldn't be like the worst thing in the world. That would have gotten the Mickey Ekwonu last year, which would have been nice. It does, though, maybe show how little the league thinks of their short-term prospects, and more importantly, what the league thinks of their quarterback room in particular. John Schneider, he knows that room is incredibly important. They're going to have to get it right.
We're always, you know, looking to see what the landscape looks like, especially at that position, right? We always talk about the quarterback and the head coach being the most important people in the building, right? So you're constantly evaluating and watching and see what's happening throughout the National Football League. But you know, we have a lot of confidence in the guys that are here. I mean, Jacob Eason can throw it around the park like crazy, and so can Drew and Gino. And so you know, we have confidence in those guys, and we'll keep looking and see what's going on.
Yeah, kind of an open-ended answer, of course, from John Schneider. That was last week with Wyman and Bob. Yes, we've got some confidence in the guys who are here. Yes, we're willing to go out and look and see what else is out there. Does that mean Baker Mayfield? Does it mean Nick Foles? Could there be another name-brand quarterback brought in here? Again, I think probably, and Brock has said this a few times, some of that depends on what Drew Lock does here over the course of the next month or so. Does he really seize the day in mini camps once they start practicing? Or are there enough concerns that they've got to feel like they've got to go elsewhere in order to find it?
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, back to both basketball and hockey tonight as both sports start the next round of their respective postseasons in the NBA. It'll be the Celtics in Miami. They tip off the Eastern Conference Finals this evening. Heat, of course, were the top seed in the East. They dispatched with Philly in 6, and then 2 games in the NHL, Tampa and Florida. Game 1 of an all-Florida series. That doesn't sound right for hockey. And then Colorado hosting St. Louis. We'll see if anybody can give the Avs much of a challenge. That is everything you need to know. We do a quarter past every hour here on the Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports.
A lot of text supporting your side here.
Oh, yeah?
Everybody should know how to bunt.
Really? People who can use text, like are young enough to have that view. I would think that my side is mostly filled with people in their 70s and 80s.
And then there's another good one here from the 503. Mike, as they would say on Reddit, you cray.
Maybe I am. Look, again, like I think if you have a belief that guys should bunt more in baseball in general, you probably are cray. Honestly, like I understand that that's no longer part of the
game.
It's
not like they didn't think about it. Like everybody's screaming at their TV of like, why aren't they bunting?
Right.
They didn't miss it. This is a very, very practiced by the numbers, odds purely behind decisions, right? These are all data.
And I think it was wrong. In that spot, most of the time, I think it's right. In that spot, I think it's wrong because I think what you need is a base runner. However you can get one.
Completely agree.
What is the best way to get a base runner? And I think your percentage of getting him on base goes up if you give him a shot to bunt down the third baseline with literally no one there. Literally. This isn't even like, oh, they shifted him, but there's still a shortstop. Literally, there's no one on that side of the field. The closest player, if he bunts, is the left fielder. And I guess it's the left fielder because there's also a center left fielder, a right center fielder, and a right fielder.
Yeah, they went with four outfielders and they put Dante Bichette.
They should have put Dante Bichette out there.
Bichette.
On the right side.
The shortstop's the one who actually fielded the ball in the field.
And he was in short right field.
Yeah.
They had three guys on the right side of second base, four guys in the outfield. I guess the pitcher, in theory, could hustle over there and make some sort of miraculous play, but I don't know. Yusei Kikuchi is a lefty running over, spinning around. Doesn't really seem like that's the likely outcome. You need base runners. You're down. It's getting late in the game. The home run is not the most important thing in that spot. A double is not worth much more than a single is to you in that spot. You just got to get on base. And so, you know, again, I changed my tune. It's not generally how I feel. I promise this is not old man radio saying, hey, why don't they bunt anymore? In my day, they used to bunt guys over and manufacture runs, and where's the hit and run? Like, hey, I get it. The game has changed. That's fine.
In my day, we all just ate steroids and hit 75 home runs.
Exactly, right, which is fine, too. I think that there may end up being value to that part of the game again if and when they make some of the changes they're talking about making to baseball, but there's not today. I'm not out here saying they should bunt every time. But I think this one actually was a rare case where I would change my mind on that and say, yeah, base runner is the most important thing here. So, look, maybe Jesse Winker can't bunt. You know what I say to that? Learn how to bunt. It's not that hard. Just hold the bat out. Lay down the bunt. Of all the things in sports, I feel like bunting has to be one of the easiest.
All right. I mean, okay. Then we should be seeing it so much more.
No, because it's not that valuable. You don't need to see it that often because it's not that valuable most of the time.
The concept is so easy until you're called upon to do it. And also pitching now, the amount of movement, the amount of opportunity for you to just get yourself buried in strikes.
But all of that movement is true when you're trying to hit the ball, which is harder than just holding out a bat and letting the ball hit it.
And you have 9 million reps swinging at those pitches and getting used to the adjustments versus holding one bat still and trying to guess where it's going to end up on you.
Well, you're not guessing. You're allowed to move it. Jeez. All right. We'll move it along, talk to Brock here for a couple of minutes. We'll give Justin the last word on this one. And then, of course, we will all torture Mora together in just about 20 minutes. It's coming up. It's Mike Salk Show in Seattle Sports on 710 Seattle Sports Talk.
Brock and Salk. With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Well, good morning, Brock.
Well, good morning, Michael.
Remember those old guys yelling at each other in Ireland after the rugby matches?
Yeah. Those commentators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're funny.
Very personal. Did you remember those guys yelling at us to get out of their English pub?
I know, yeah. Brock and I, after Ireland beat England in a huge match, we were in an Irish pub and we were walking down looking for some food. We walked into what turned out to be more of an English pub, and Brock was wearing head-to-toe Ireland gear. They gave this look like, get out now or this is going to be a really ugly situation.
You're not welcome here.
Right.
Okay, we're closed.
Oh, yeah. Didn't they tell us they were closed?
Yeah, they told us they were closed.
They were like, well, all those people are... Yeah, we're closed.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. I guess we'll move it up the road a little bit.
We'll mosey on out.
Yeah, that's pretty much how
I look very Irish. I mean, I could understand. I looked very similar.
Brock was the tallest person in Ireland by a foot and a half.
Yeah.
There wasn't another person we ran into within a foot and a half of Brock's height. It was pretty crazy.
So you were cantankerous last night?
I was. Did last night bother you at all? Yeah, that one got to me, man. For the first time this year, I was legitimately mad.
Yes, because as you tweeted, it was a guy that at the end last year, you wouldn't even roll out there in any meaningful game, and here he is holding you six innings in one hit. Mm-hmm. And it's funny now. I watch a lot of these at-bats, and I don't know. It's kind of sad in some ways. I never really looked at it this way, but now I do, and I can't really stop doing it, and that is you can't miss that pitch. Like when they throw a cement mixer and Toro's got the bases loaded and one out, and the first pitch is just a cement mixer in the middle of the plate, and he doesn't swing at it. Even Titus is like, you can't always take a first pitch, mm-hmm. and especially when it's that one. And that was the best one he got. You know, the next one's 98 in the upper right. Next one's a nasty, you know, curveball, and then he has to protect with two strikes and pops up. And, I mean, you don't get many pitches to hit. And when you do, you can't miss it. And unfortunately, I think the Mariners now, 16 games scoring two runs or less?
Yeah.
You don't have a game or two. You've strung together almost half a month of games where you're not executing on those pitches. They miss.
Yeah, and it's really hard to be competitive in this league scoring two runs, right? And thankfully, their starting rotation has been fantastic, better even probably than expected. Their bullpen has been good, not great, but very good.
Yep.
And the lineup just is not delivering. And, like, you can kind of point at some individual success stories. Obviously, you know, what you've gotten so far from J.P. Crawford and Ty France has been great. Julio Rodriguez is probably about what you'd expect, maybe a little bit better. Yep. And I know Jesse Winker's starting to come around. Suarez has had his moments. But taken as a whole, and especially when you're watching, you know, in one night, Mike Ford and Steven Souza and the rest, like, it's a tough watch. They're not hitting.
No. Nope. And they're, I think, certainly missing Mitch Haniger, and that's not an excuse.
A lot.
But it's just a reality, and unfortunately for him.
You can't have that level of response to just missing Mitch Haniger.
Correct.
Do you know what I mean? Like that, I get it. It would be a lot better if Haniger was in there, but he's not Barry Bonds in his prime on steroids. Like, he's a good player. The idea that Mitch Haniger would change them from a two-run-a-game team to a four- or five-run-a-game team is patently absurd.
Nope, that would not be the case. So what do you do? What does Scott Servais do? I mean, he's tried to mix the lineup. He's moved people up and down. Certainly, as you said, Winker and Julio have found a little bit more of a rhythm, and they aren't missing some of those pitches. They were certainly missing the first month of the season. Is there anything? I mean, I see Scott kind of reaching and doing all he can lineup-wise, order-wise, moving things around. I don't know if there is an answer until Mitch gets back and hopefully Jared gains some confidence.
I mean, but that's July. I mean, you're talking about a month and a half, 2 months from now.
Correct.
I mean, I don't know how a lineup with Mike Ford, Cal Raleigh, Luis Torrens, who's not hitting right now, and Steven Souza, and Abraham Toro, and Dylan Moore. I don't know how that lineup lasts until mid-July.
So are you ready, you know, in a year that we all push for this team to be aggressive, in an offseason that we all pushed for this team to spend, and ultimately they were, I think, wise as we sit here now to not spend on Bryant, to not spend on Trevor Story. Yeah. But is it now time for, okay, let's go. This pitching is good. This window is here. You have money to spend. There, you know, is it time to, what are we, mid-May? Is it time to stir up the trade market? Is it time to dig into this?
Well, do you want to double down? Is that what you're saying? I mean, you're only a few games. You're, what, five games under or four games under 500 right now? But, you know, we're talking about this lineup in a way that does not make things sound, you know, positive for the rest of the season. You want to double down?
Well, are you going to just be patient with Haniger? Are you going to be patient with Kyle Lewis? Are you going to be patient with Jared Kelnick? I mean, I think that those are the decisions you've got to make. I mean, I would think by the end of May, and especially if the Angels continue to do what the Angels are doing, I don't know if you can catch them if you're patient till July. I don't know if that's reasonable and feasible. So by the end of May here, you give this crew a couple more weeks, and it's been a brutal stretch, let's be honest.
Very hard.
I mean, this schedule was not set up for success in April and May. It was some difficult trips. This is as brutal as it gets. The Mets are a good club. The Blue Jays are a good club. The Rays are a good club. The Marlins are playing well. I mean, you're facing playoff contending clubs all on the road, and you're not dead by any means. But you're sitting here in hovering at four or five games under with this lineup. If they continue to hit like this, you could be looking at eight or nine games under, Mike, by the end of May.
Yeah.
So
at that point, you're probably not going to give it a run. You can't start investing in the current if you're nine games under 500. You got to be realistic about your situation.
Or do you invest in a bat or two in the trade market, knowing that Mitch and knowing that hopefully Kyle Lewis and those guys and reinforcements come? I mean, this was to be a year, right? I mean, this was to be a year, and you're getting it out of Logan, and you know, you're getting it out of Marco, what you expect. You're pleasantly surprised with Kirby in a couple starts. You know, Robbie Ray's not been Mr. Cy Young, but he's not been a complete dumpster fire. I mean, he's been pretty solid. So you're kind of getting what you want from your rotation. I mean, I think if the goal of this offseason, the conversation was, okay, it's time to spend. It's time to spend. And we know what Jerry does best. In a little bit like his counterpart down the road with the Seahawks and John Schneider is to trade. Is it time to give Jerry the you know, to open up the purse string and say, okay, if you can find the suitor out there to aid this team and benefit this team, let's be aggressive in this trade market.
The challenge for me though is investing, and I guess it depends what you're trading and how significant. If you can find a way to take on salary rather than trade big time prospects, 1,000%. I guess I'm with you. But I don't think that you can't do that in May. Like, for the most part, those deals aren't available for you in May. Those deals don't come available until July, Brock. You're 2 months away from being able to make a move where you're not dealing big-time prospects but taking back big salary. Because if you want someone now, first of all, there aren't a lot of trades happening in mid-May. Obviously. And if you want to do it, you've got to go stir it up, which means you probably have to start offering more in terms of minor league prospects than you want to give up.
But if you want to be ahead, right, if you want to be ahead of the curve, you cannot be reactionary. I'm not saying right now there is anything on the table, but aren't these the conversations you have to have in-house right now?
Yeah.
I mean, don't you have to start putting your ducks in a row here if you're Jerry and you're John Stanton and your crew and you're looking at this team and you're looking at results and where you are and saying, okay, we can't do anything right this second, but we are not going to be in reaction mode.
Well, then that what they would say is, okay, to not be in reaction mode, what that means is waiting for Winker to do his thing, waiting for Toro, who they believe in, waiting and, you know, waiting for guys to kind of live up to their career numbers rather than pulling the trigger or after a month of baseball.
Well, we're about a month and a half, and you're looking around the league, and you're realizing...
Not even, but yes.
You're looking at your underperformance,
right?
Pretty drastically with a number of these guys. And I guess, you know, you pull that yellow legal pad out, which they've done before, and I hope they're doing this, and I think they're doing this, and that is, okay, let's begin the process of what we really want to do here.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Mitch when he gets healthy. You know, maybe it is considering a top prospect at the lower level. Maybe it is, more importantly and most importantly, making sure we're facilitating conversations that people understand we are willing to take on significant salary.
Brock, great stuff as always. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Okay, buddy.
All right, there you go. There's Brock Heward every morning, of course, 7:45 and 9:30. And a little reminder, if you're a 9 o'clock hour listener, tomorrow we're going to talk to Clint Hurt, Seahawks defensive coordinator, and I'm looking forward to that. You know, we had requested both him and Shane Waldron here kind of post rookie minicamp. We had a chance to talk to Shane last week. I thought that was instructive. I didn't know that much about Clint Hurt until he got the job this year, and then we heard him talk about it and the passion and the sort of, I don't know, just listening to him got me pumped up. Right,
you were saying that he addressed like every Seahawks Twitter concern in like the first 5 minutes of his press conference.
I thought it was pretty remarkable. You're like, oh, okay, yes, more of this guy, please. And then you add in some of the combined traits that you're going to get from Sean Desai and was it Carl Scott, right? And so, I'm pretty excited about him and to talk to him. I want to find out a little bit about this idea that Brady Henderson brought up last week. That maybe, you know, they were a little unwilling because of Ken Norton to play younger players over the last couple of years. Is that going to be something? I mean, they're going to have to do some of that just based on the way they've drafted and the way they've put together this team. And I can't really see much downside in them doing so. So, yeah, I want to ask him a little bit about that and kind of how they're going to develop some of these young kids and what this new system looks like and how we as a fan we'll see something different from what we've seen before. So looking forward to that. We'll do that tomorrow morning, as I said, at 9 o'clock, an opportunity to talk to Seahawks defensive coordinator Clint Hurt. I will admit that I am now essentially incapable of focusing for the rest of the show, and I don't know how I'm going to make it through tomorrow or Thursday morning either. We have just received word officially here from the PGA Tour that for the PGA Championship, which starts Thursday,
yes,
for the first two rounds, teeing off at 9:11 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday, so 6:11 our time. The group is Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and Tiger Woods.
Oh, boy.
I don't know that you could put together a more interesting group of any three golfers.
Maura's...
All right, Maura, that's enough.
What?
That is an incredible pairing. Woods, Spieth, and McIlroy might be the three most interesting followable names in this tournament. And to put them together, I saw somebody say the PGA Tour woke up and decided on Max Chaos or something like that. Like, they're just, that's a savage group, man.
That's awesome.
I can't wait. I'm already excited. Jordan comes in playing really good golf, won his second to last tournament, second place last week, and now, you know, he's looking for the career Grand Slam. So, yeah, for my favorite athlete on the planet, I'm pretty excited. And then now put him with Rory and Tiger for the first 2 days of the tournament. That's pretty awesome, man. That's going to be sweet. I can't wait.
Yeah. That's a golf dream. That's good.
It's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty darn good. All right, let's do some ranking.
Hogan, you're choking.
No, I'm excited. What can I tell you?
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwanfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list. I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
Yeah, well, we'll also have Jeff Passan tomorrow morning at 7:30 as well. So should be a pretty good day. Last night was tough. Is that what got us to this, right? The fear of being too close to a cliff
this
after
was
watching
your,
last night's game.
Somebody needs to walk me back from the ledge, the cliff. The
that was my text I sent last night. And that's how I opened the show today. Do you think it worked? Did we all work together to feel better? I don't know how well it worked.
I told you what I did. I just had some palate cleanser with Forgetting Sarah Marshall after
great
that
movie.
Game. Good early game. Got it done. Made some dinner. Watched a movie.
Man, we should have just ranked the top five lines from Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Or like the top five subplots from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. There's so many good congruent character stories going on in that movie.
I've probably seen that movie more than any other.
Really? I love that movie. So funny. All right. Well, maybe we'll do that another day. Instead, today we are ranking cliffs. Cliffs ranked. All right?
Can't wait. Can't wait.
Like Bart Scott over there. All right. Cliffs. Now, there's a ton of them and a bunch that didn't make the list here. Unfortunately, the cliff bar does not quite make the list, although they're Avery's favorite. She likes those mint ones.
So, I completely missed Cliff Bar. That's good.
I just thought of that one a moment ago. So Cliff Bar does not make the list. The Cliffs of Moher, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's in Ireland, right? Famous cliffs.
Uh-huh.
Right? Those didn't quite get it.
Those are pretty cool.
Clifford.
Like the best cliffs.
Clifford, the Big Red Dog. Good cliff. Didn't quite make it.
It's a good cliff.
As I said, there's... It's kind of a powerhouse list. Mariners fans may remember this guy.
Here in the late innings, and now speaking of the bullpen, Heathcliff Slocum on to try and nail it down for Randy Johnson, although now it is not a save opportunity.
Yeah, well, then he probably did okay, because Heathcliff Slocum had some issues.
Yeah, he did not do okay.
Red Sox closer for a little while, you may remember. He was traded here to Seattle for Jason Varitek and Derek Lowe. The story goes that when Dan Duquette called... He said or, not and.
Between the two names that he got.
It's like, hey, I'll give you Heathcliff Slocum. Can you give me either Jason Varitek or Derek Lowe? And I forget who the Mariners GM was at the time. He's like, oh, yeah, no, well, sounds good. We'll give you both.
That can't be true.
That's the story.
Oh, no.
So
I don't want to hear it.
It's such a sad story. It's very, very sad for Mariners fans.
No.
It's just brutal. No on that. No on Heathcliff the cat.
Heathcliff, no one should terrify their neighborhood. But Heathcliff just won't be undone. Playing pranks on everyone.
I didn't know that theme.
Was Heathcliff the cat like a Wish.com Garfield?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. Sort of like a generic Kroger brand Garfield.
Man, I don't think I really know Heathcliff.
Heathcliff was like a junkyard cat, right?
Yeah, he's sort of a troublemaker cat.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
A junkyard cat. Like okay.
No Heathcliff from Wuthering Heights, if you're a big, 18th century romance novel fan.
Just lost a lot of audience right there.
All right, I do what I can.
Bummed.
Let's see, who else didn't make the list? No Cliffhanger, the movie.
Tucker and Walker, we're missing three bags.
What's in them?
None of your business.
Suits, socks, $100 million, the usual stuff.
All right. So, yeah, that didn't quite make the list. Close.
It's an awful lot of what didn't make the list.
Yeah. Well, are you ready for the list?
There must be a lot of good cliffs on the way.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good cliffs on this list, and I will start with... Hold on. I got to find the sound of this. Hey, where's the song?
What do you need?
I need the Cliffs of Dover. That was number five on my list.
You didn't tell me about the Cliffs of Dover. Number
five on
your list.
You were out there. I thought you went and found it.
No. You were too busy giving him lists of things that weren't on the list.
Do you want me to just sing? I can't even sing it. It's an instrumental.
Yes, sing, please.
Eric
Why
Johnson.
Am I the only one that you guys
the guitar song.
Yeah, Cliffs of Dover.
I'm sorry. I did not have that one.
No, I thought you did.
Nope.
All right, see if you can find it. We'll come back. That was number five on my list. Number four. Now, I don't know whether I can give him the same level of appreciation and introduction that Bob Stelton does, but I'll say Cliff Averill.
Cliff Averill is a first-generation Haitian-American. His 11 and a half sacks in 2016 were a career high.
Cliff Averill gets around right tackle, spikes the ball out of Goff's hands.
He goes to celebrate, but it's hard to celebrate with Cliff when you try to celebrate with him, he runs away. You know, he loves that TV time.
I heard Bob introduce Cliff last week, and I think he tried to nominate him for a Nobel Peace Prize.
And how so?
I've never heard an interview. He was like one of my all-time favorite player and an even better person. I mean, like, he went on, and I like Cliff, too. Like, don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with Cliff, but it was over the top.
Gassing him up.
That was mild. He's been coming on with him for a while. That's how Bob always introduces him, and it's probably mild. Been even more so in the past.
All right, here we go. There you go. There's Eric Johnson.
The Cliffs of Dover.
Yeah.
I remember this song as a kid.
Oh, I'm so glad we got this. I was worried.
Sounds great on AM radio.
Okay, Cliffs of Dover. You got it. Is that enough?
I don't know. I could just sit here and listen to this for the next couple of minutes. We only have three cliffs to go. Maura, you should want this one because I don't think you're going to like number three. You should probably want as much Cliffs of Dover as possible. Because unfortunately, number three.
Man, I'm in trouble.
Oh.
I'm in real pain.
Wyclef, John.
I love Wyclef, but why is he on this list?
Because we're listing cliffs. And he's Wyclef Jean.
Pushing
erroneous. Erroneous. Erroneous on both counts.
Pushing more closer to the edge of the
you
cliff.
You would not allow. You would not allow. Any gorillas or apes in our monkey conversation?
Because those
yesterday.
Were monkeys. These are cliffs.
His name is Wyclef.
He's
not Wyclef
Jean.
You're the most annoying person.
I don't see how this is challenging. Monkeys are different from apes, but his name is Wyclef Jean. How is he not in your list of five famous cliffs? What am I missing here? All right, I need my sound back up. We have more to come here.
So I'll be gone.
Oh, sorry, that's still more Wyclef. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to play more Wyclef.
I love Wyclef's music. He's just not Wyclef.
Oh, what? You would have preferred Cliff Lee on here? That guy was a bust. We can't put Cliff Lee on this list. Two cliffs left to go.
Mm-hmm.
Two cliffs left to go. Number two on my list, and I think hard rock metal fans will agree, Cliff 'em All, Cliff Burton. Bassist for Metallica originally, if you don't know, unfortunately died in a tragic accident. But one of the all-time greats. This is, Anesthesia, right? Pulling Teeth?
Yep, Pulling Teeth.
There you go. His bass solo from Kill 'Em All. Cliff Burton, number two on the list of all-time Cliffs. Hard to top. I very seriously considered Cliff Burton as number one.
It's a really good Cliff. People are agreeing so far. Minus the Wyclef.
How does Wyclef not on this list? I don't understand.
Move on.
It's just not spelled
Move
the
on.
Same. Not a cliff.
You're that worried about spelling now? Who cares? Wyclef Jean. That's how I say his name. All right. The number one cliff, I think, should be fairly obvious. He is a legend of the silver screen.
They drank steaming hot pots of tea on the hottest days of the year to balance out their inside and outside temperatures. See, conversely, drinking an ice-cold drink on a cold day actually results in a more comfortable body temperature.
All right. Why do you drink ice-cold beer on a hot day?
Mr. Clavin. What else are you going to do with it?
Cliff Clavin, of course. John Ratzenberger from Cheers. Number one all-time Cliff.
He's a good Cliff.
It's really good. There's a couple of really good restaurants that were Cliff Houses. We just got a text one. Cliff House in Tacoma. There's Cliff House in San Francisco. I think it's gone now.
Okay. Those could be good cliffs.
Someone also said Cliff Notes.
Cliff
Those
notes.
Can be important.
Cliff Notes are important, yes. For cheating, mostly. I think that's how I read Wuthering Heights.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying.
It's true. I used the Cliff Notes, not for Wuthering Heights, but in that same class I was supposed to read A Tale of Two Cities, and I definitely did not read it and read the Cliff Notes instead. But then I got concerned that they were going to realize I didn't read it, so my buddy Dave and I ended up like kind of like beating up our books a little bit to make it seem well-worn, like we hadn't just looked at them for the first time the morning of the test. Yeah, not our finest moment. All right, well, there you go. Cliff Clavin and his pal Noami, number one here on our list of all-time cliffs.
And I hope everybody has talked themselves off the cliff. It's another day.
Yes. All right. Well, hopefully Logan Gilbert does even more to keep us farther and farther away from that ledge, from that cliff. And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. We got Jeff Passan at 7:30 and Clint Hurt. Not a cliff, but a Clint. He'll join us at 9 o'clock. We'll see you guys at 6 a.m. Goodbye.